We are the only minority group that you can join overnight.
From Overnight Productions.
In the twinkling of an eye, in fact.
1-5-0.
Welcome to the 1500th edition of This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell.
And I'm Greg Gordon. Our news wrap crew is off for the holidays. They'll catch us up on the stories in or affecting LGBT communities around the world in early January, including this week's breaking news out of North Carolina, where banana Republicans have rejected HB 2 repeal.
This week, we commemorate TWO 1500 with recollections from some of the stalwart volunteer correspondents who have brought us this far.
This is Maggie Young and Katie Cook, and we are the Sapphic Nomads. 4 years ago, we set out on a year-long journey to learn about LGBTQ people around the world. Through social media and friends of friends, we were able to connect with people all over the globe, and in addition to doing interviews, we got to eat family meals with them, go to gay clubs with them, and even march on the streets with them. When people ask us what we learned on this journey, we often find ourselves talking about the various ways people felt they fit into a global LGBTQ movement. One interview we found particularly interesting was with Deepak Kashyap, a psychologist in Mumbai, India.
We don't have a culture of giving equal rights to people. You are an untouchable. You are the Shudras, and I am the Rajput, and I am the Brahmin, and I'm... So India's definition of equal is some people are more equal than others. This entire idea of equality is a Western import, and I would rather I import this.
Some people we interviewed also argued that the very labeling of LGBTQ is itself a Western idea. For example, in Samoa, there is the ancient tradition of what some refer to as a third gender identity. President of the Fa'afafine Association, Roger Stanley, explains.
Fa'afafine, or the type of people that we are, is very unique. It's a Samoan word. It derives from the word fafine, which is woman. Fa'a is become like a woman. Fa'afafine has always been here and always been around in Samoa during the pre-Christianity. We've been born biologically males, but we chose to become women because most of us feel that it's from inside, it's from the heart.
Setting off into our journey, we'd never imagined just how deep and rich the experience would be. And just as we've felt honored to meet and interview so many great people, we also have a profound gratitude for This Way Out and its vast and diverse network of listeners around the world. We'd like to congratulate This Way Out on their milestone 1500th show. From Denver, Colorado, this is Maggie Young and Katie Cook for This Way Out.
Hi, this is John Frame from Brisbane, Australia, congratulating This Way Out on the landmark 1500th program of world-class LGBT support and entertainment. I'm proud to have been a regular contributor for nearly two decades.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
One of my favorite shared interviews was with Rufus Wainwright in January 2005, in the lead-up to an Australian tour he did with his family, the McGarrigle family.
When I started my career, the first thing I said to my record company, even before I sat down at the table, I said, I just want you to know, before we have this meeting, I am not pretending to be straight. I am going to be totally honest about my homosexuality. Because I was afraid that, you know, contractually they'd try to bind me into something. And then also, I mean, I've always really been excited by the history of gay culture and the real sort of tradition of high art and high standards, which you know, has existed for hundreds of years within gay culture. And I felt I was at a tremendous advantage because I could draw from that and you know, carry on that tradition. That has definitely fueled me and helped me.
For a song with a straightforward message, including the title, Gay Messiah, it does have the potential, I think, to offend people who want to be offended.
Yeah. That song's interesting to me because it's had three lives already. When I first wrote it, it was essentially a joke song. I mean, it was something to be sung at, you know, cocktail parties or, you know, to sort of liven up an audience and laugh a little. And then it became a bit of a protest song and, you know, was always followed by a plea, go out and vote in the next election, you know, because us gays are kind of in the line of fire here and are not appreciated by the majority of the Republican Party. And then after, unfortunately, the election was lost, the song then became a literal prayer for an actual gay messiah and for some sort of divine intervention. And I do kind of consider it in that weird way, like I do consider it like an actual prayer.
Better pray for yourselves. Better pray for yourselves. 'Cause the game of science.
This is John Frame from Brisbane, Australia.
I'm Dixie Treichel, a host on Fresh Fruit. I and my co-host, John Townsend, have delighted in sharing some of our locally produced material with This Way Out. Kate Bornstein was on tour performing and doing readings from her new memoir, A Queer and Pleasant Danger. While in Minneapolis, she talked with me about her theater and writing development and how she incorporates gender theory into her work.
My original art was theater. Theater is where I first write my pieces. Theater is where I come up with the ideas, because theater, live performance art, that's the scariest thing. Getting up in front of people and ripping your heart out and saying scary stuff about yourself and saying, can I still be a decent human being? That has been the basis of all my writings.
The very first book you ever wrote.
People pushed me on it. I didn't want to write a book. Theater, you can change the ending at the last minute if you want to. You can realize, hey, this isn't going so well, and change it and make it better. Once it's a book, it's in stone. And I wasn't sure of anything.
Was that Gender Outlaw?
It was. After Gender Outlaw came out and was a hit, so Routledge asked me right away, would you write another one? Then it turned into a child workbook format, my gender workbook. It was still trans theory. There was more in there about the impact of race, age, class onto the idea of trans. So that was a transformation in my writing. I was looking out beyond trans as a single issue. And then I toured around and I was really getting tired of all the bullying I was seeing. That eventually became one chapter in the book, Hello, Cruel World.
Mm-hmm.
And so writing Hello, Cruel World was learning to write about the scariest stuff there is, death, your own, and doing it with love. So I was able to talk like from this elder point of view for the first time. I called myself a crone in training while I was writing that book.
Kate Bornstein in Minneapolis. This is Dixie Treichel for This Way Out.
I wonder who wrote the book of love.
This is Janet Mason. I've been writing and recording commentary for This Way Out for almost two decades. I've long been intrigued by the intimate nature of radio. I have memories of being shaped by the radio. Early in life as an adolescent, alone in my room in my parents' house, but connected to the world through the magic power of radio. When I first came out, I would listen to my local lesbian feminist radio show. Yes, I said lesbian feminist. It was that long ago. As a child, I discovered the world through books. It makes sense that I would want to keep those worlds alive by writing and recording commentary on literature, particularly literature that reflects queer life. A lot has changed, but some would say the more things change, the more they stay the same. Occupying queer space on the radio airwaves is important now as ever to the LGBT community. It has been my privilege to work with This Way Out to provide you with queer commentary over the years. Every now and then I hear from a listener, and always I am moved. Not only do I get to be part of an important LGBT vehicle for queer culture, but I get to be part of your world also. And being connected to the worldwide LGBTQ movement, I feel larger than myself. In the words of the great gay bard Walt Whitman, I am large, I contain multitudes. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
The History of the Rainbow Minute, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. On February 9, 2005, Richmond gay activist Judd Proctor just happened to tune in to the new community radio station WRIR. He was delighted to discover This Way Out, a gay and lesbian news magazine in Richmond of all places. He immediately called the station to offer his support. Judd and his partner Brian Burns decided to underwrite This Way Out and had the board operator read a 30-second blurb honoring a gay or lesbian icon in history. The first was about Harvey Milk, who stressed the importance of coming out. It was read live on the air by Dustin Richardson on February 16, 2005. Blurbs remembering architect Philip Johnson and lesbian activist Barbara Giddings followed. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Sally Holscreve.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out.
1-5-0-0
This Way Out program number 1500 continues.
In the part of Amsterdam, in the part of Amsterdam.
This is the first legal civil marriage between two men or two women, and that is unique in the world.
Today I finally get to look at the man that I love and say, will you please marry me?
Yes to inclusion, yes to generosity, yes to love, yes to equal marriage.
Marriage equality has been one of the signature LGBT issues during our 1500 show run. Listen to how we marched down the aisle from the Netherlands to the U.S. to Ireland to Canada with coverage like this.
How the world can change, it can change like that, due to one little word, married.
Hello, This Way Out listeners. It's Heather Kitching here. And back in 2005, I covered for This Way Out the Canadian House of Commons vote to legalize same-sex marriage. I covered this from a pub in the LGBT village in Vancouver, where I was living at the time, because that's where queers in Vancouver went to watch the vote on TV. Queers in most provinces of Canada had already won same-sex marriage through the courts by this point, so this whole thing kind of felt a bit anticlimactic. But then I thought, this is still a historic moment. This is our democratically elected government affirming that same-sex couples are equal to straight couples. So at the last minute, I went. And of course, I'm very glad I did, because this is one of those moments that has gone down in history.
The question is the following one. Mr. Cotton, seconded by Mr. Peterson, moved that Bill C-38, an act respecting certain aspects of legal capacity for marriage for civil purposes, be now read a third time and do pass. In favor of the motion, will please rise. Monsieur Marcella Salaman.
The crowd cheered when our supporters stood up to cast their votes. They booed when our opponents voted against us. And then it happened.
Yes pour 158, 158. Nays contre 133, 133.
Heather Kitching.
This is Brian Goebel, and I contributed features to This Way Out for many years. And one of my favorite interviews was with the playwright Tony Kushner, a writer I really admire and look up to. It actually took me a really long time to land the interview, but he finally agreed. And in 2008, I flew to New York City. It was my first time in New York. And I was a nervous wreck, but he was a very gracious host. He had a stack of books about Lincoln on his desk because he was writing a film for Steven Spielberg at the time. And it was an incredible interview. And as I was leaving, his last words to me were, "Enjoy the city." And boy, did I enjoy New York City.
Greetings, prophet. The great work begins. The messenger has arrived.
Tony Kushner's masterpiece, Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes, thrust him onto the international stage in the early 90s as one of the major playwrights of his generation. The seven-hour epic in two parts is a politically and emotionally fused portrait of gay life in the 80s under Ronald Reagan. It won Kushner a Pulitzer Prize and was made into a film directed by Mike Nichols in 2003.
If people like you didn't have President Reagan to demonize, where would you be?
If he didn't have people like me to demonize, where would he be?
I visited Kushner at his tiny Manhattan office.
Anything that's worth doing is hard to do. And I think that it seems to me, at any rate, that learning how to write a really good play is a lifetime's work. And, to do something well is great, but to do something better after that and to keep improving would seem to me to be the goal of the thing. You don't want to just have done it well once. You really would like to be, you know, to have a career in a way like O'Neill's, where he, you know, got better and better and better and better until he wrote his greatest play and the greatest play any American ever wrote at the end of his life. I would like to believe that at the end of my life I'll be able to say, well, I kept trying to figure out how to write plays and get better at them.
Tony Kushner, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goebel in New York.
You are fabulous, each and every one. And I bless you. More life. The great work begins.
Who made This Way Out sing? Our queer music maestros take up the baton again in honor of their fallen friend. But first,
making it to This Way Out number 1500 would have been nearly impossible without the rock-solid journalism of the late Cindy Friedman, our news director for more than two decades.
Her skills as a news hound were without peer, but what we miss most about Cindy Friedman is her often wicked sense of humor. Here's an example from February 1999 with Cindy and co-anchor Leo Garcia.
Tinky-winky, tinky-winky, tinky-winky.
The most widely reported gay story in U.S. media this week was the outing of the star of an international television show, which has spun off a marketing empire of best-selling videos, audio recordings, and other items. Former leader of the now-defunct Moral Majority, Jerry Falwell, has published in his National Liberty Journal this parent alert.
The sexual preference of Tinky Winky, the largest of the four Teletubbies characters on the series that airs in America on PBS stations, has been the subject of debate since the series premiered in England in 1997. The character, whose voice is obviously that of a boy, has been found carrying a purse in many episodes.
Teletubbies producers insist that the so-called purse is in fact a magic bag. Here to speak for himself is
Tinky Winky.
Mr. Winky, would you care to comment?
Now, further evidence that the creators of the series intend for Tinky Winky to be a gay role model have surfaced. He is purple, the gay pride color, and his antenna is shaped like a triangle, the gay pride symbol.
In our reviews of some 40 mainstream press reports and columns, Falwell has been universally ridiculed.
Again.
Falwell has been universally ridiculed. After 2 days of media assault, Falwell told NBC that he didn't really mean that you are gay, but that if you are, he is concerned. There are also those who maintain that, as a Teletubby, you are only vaguely human and cannot be considered to have gender attributes at all, much less a sexual orientation. Mr. Winky, I must ask you the question that has so obsessed America this week.
Uh-oh.
Are you gay?
Big hug. Bye.
For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman with Leo Garcia.
Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy that way.
Welcome back to the Audiophile 2010 Year in Review. I'm Pam Marshall.
I'm Christopher David Trentum.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle.
That's from the final edition of the 14-year run of Audiophile on This Way Out in December of 2010. Our monthly queer music segment brought dozens of fabulously talented outperformers to the attention of This Way Out listeners worldwide.
We asked audiophilers J.D. Doyle in Houston and Chris Wilson and Pam Marshall in Los Angeles to reflect on their longtime collaboration. They each also wanted to pay tribute to a beloved colleague and This Way Out benefactor.
What few of the listeners realized, and what made working on Audiophile both interesting and challenging, is that, no, we did not record the show at the same time or even in the same studio.
Everything became possible with a traveling laptop and sound equipment. But how did we create the proper acoustic in-studio environment at home? For the better part of our 14 years on the air, Audiophile was, in fact, recorded in the closet.
It still kind of amazes me.
By the way, all of our shows are still available on the internet at audiophile.org. Just click on Audiophile Archives, which is maintained with a searchable index by J.D. Doyle.
The producers of This Way Out asked Chris and I to each pick a favorite artist segment out of those we did. Well, that's a little like picking among your children, as over the 14-year period, we featured 424 different recordings by 325 different artists. But we did each manage to come up with just one.
Each of these artists was featured three times during the Audiophile run, so yes, we really like them. They are Janis Ian and Levi Kreiss. Janis, of course, has been an important artist since the 1960s, and Levi won a Tony Award in 2010 for the musical Million Dollar Quartet. These segments originally ran in 2004 and 2006.
I am standing on the bones of a mountain to hide a climb.
You know, artists, when we're doing our job, we get to take people's dreams and make something visible out of them. And then when people forget that they have dreams and everything looks really dark and horrible, we get to remind you that they exist. And that's a serious privilege for us, you know. I feel like I stand on a lot of people's bones every time I get up on stage. And the bones of people like Billie Holiday who do that for me and continue to do it for me.
Somehow I feel I should apologize, 'cause I'm just a little shaken, but what's going on inside?
The second album by Levi Kreiss is called One of the Ones.
It's a collection of songs about relationships that I've been in with various guys that I've crushed on or dated or loved with all my heart. I chose to keep it very intimate, the piano and the vocals, and hoping that the human experience that I've gone through is kind of relatable for everyone.
Lovely Sunday morning.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall, remembering Christopher David Trentum.
Or as we always called him, CDT.
He taught us to edit audio tape with a razor blade and keen listening skills.
He engineered many, many radio features for us, including Audiophile, eventually moving us into the 21st century with digital editing and production.
This is J.D. Doyle, and paying tribute to CDT is especially important to me. When I was invited to join Audiophile, I was fairly new at my own radio show, and what he taught me about the engineering and production part of it was invaluable and jump-started my own work. He was a picky perfectionist, and I'm sure right now he would be fussing at me for popping my peas. At times, he could be exasperating, but somehow was always right. And I am the better for knowing him.
But beyond that, he became part of our extended family, joining us for the holidays.
As well as for Pam's home-cooked meals following each audiophile recording session.
CDT was one of the most genuinely decent people I have ever known.
And although you rarely heard him on the air, Audiophile's 14-year run would not have been possible without him.
We miss him.
We certainly do. We keep up a tribute page at ChristopherDavidTrentum.com, where you can find out more about our good friend and co-producer, who loved trains and This Way Out.
And that's it for the final edition of Audiophile. We would like to thank the literally hundreds of GLBT musicians for sharing their music with us for the past 14 years.
And special thanks to Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle for providing us the opportunity to present Audiophile here on This Way Out.
And of course, we would very much like to thank you, our listeners, for supporting us over the years.
I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Christopher David Trentum.
Thank you for listening.
Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy this way.
There have been many generous funders of This Way Out who have helped us reach our 1500th program, including La Clarissa Pincola Estes, La Sociedad de Guadalupe Foundation, the Gill Foundation, the Paul Rappaport Foundation,
Dr. Robert G. Simmons Jr., the Gay Chemists Support Fund, the Schwab Charitable Fund, and most recently the Yavanna Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and the estate of audiophile producer Christopher David Trentum.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. Sapphic Nomads, Maggie Young and Katie Cook, John Frame, Dixie Trichel, Janet Mason, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Sally Hosgrief, Heather Kitching, Brian Goble, and Chris Wilson, Pam Marshall, and J.D. Doyle helped us celebrate our 1500th program.
Rufus Wainwright, Jacques Brel, Alan Cumming, the Tom Robinson Band, Janice Ian, Levi Kreis, and Sly and the Family Stone performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed or performed our theme music.
This Way Out is sustained through the generosity of our individual listener supporters.
We invite you to join them. Visit thiswayout.org to carry the TWO 1500 party right up through New Year's.
Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA.
I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Lucia Chappelle. Happy holidays from the entire This Way Out family.
We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org.
Across Europe, Africa, the Middle East, and the Asia-Pacific region on the World Radio Network.
And on more than 200 local stations around the world.
Including this community radio station.
Stay tuned.